Good afternoon.
For those of you who haven't heard from me before, again, I'm Paul Hewlett, CEO of the WBT Showcase. We are, Amanda and I are part of a firm called Development Capital Networks, and I thought it might be helpful just to introduce our firm as well as ourselves. DCN and another firm has been around since probably about 15 years now. Our company used to be called Edge Capital, and in 2002 split into DCN and Cimarron Capital Partners. We have some common ownership and some common members of our team. I am an associate with Cimarron and managing director with DCN, but I think what might be helpful to know is our affiliate, Cimarron Capital, is a fund of funds advisory firm, a little over $300 million under management. If you're not familiar with the phrase fund of funds, what that means is Cimarron actually invests capital into venture capital firms as a limited partner. So while you may be at the event seeking capital from venture managers, Cimarron is actually looking for venture managers with which they can place money. So it puts us in a very unique spot. I have been with two venture funds in an earlier life, both SBICs. My background includes investing and lending to early stage and technology companies. I share all this only to suggest to you that between Amanda and myself and Wiley, we do not view ourselves in any way, shape, or form as event planners, meeting planners, conference organizers. Okay, we look at this exercise as a year-long event to source, screen, coach, and present the best quality deals that are coming out of the federal labs, universities, and the private sector. And we take that task to heart. We enjoy that work. We like to think we live vicariously through you, the entrepreneurs, the inventors, the researchers, and as well at times the investors. But we recognize we play an intermediary role, facilitatory role, and so we look to you to put us to work. And I guess that would be just the overriding message I would give you to think about today. We have an enormous amount of resources, contacts. Do not hesitate to lean on us to help you succeed. And Amanda's going to go over the wealth of tools and resources we make available to you on the resource page. A lot of thought and an effort and trial and error has gone into these. So take advantage of them, and we're happy to partner with you between now and March 16th and 17th. That's really all I had to say.
Well, as Paul suggested, I'm going to get into just some of the logistics and some of the important dates and deadlines. All of this information is on the presenter resource page, and I'm not going to go through every piece of it, but really just kind of hit the highlights. In the next couple of weeks, some of the more important steps that you'll need to take are to complete a registration. There is a February 5th deadline. Basically, this just lets us know by registering one person from your organization that you are confirmed to participate. And as soon as we see a registration for you, we'll also begin assigning you your mentors. You will be assigned a first mentor, and then we'll assign a second mentor. Sometimes both mentors are assigned at the same time. Sometimes the assignments are staggered. We do ask that you contact your mentors. Their contact information will be available both in an email and also from your control panel. So we encourage you to reach out to them, have maybe a general presentation available for the first call that they can reference and go over with you, and just continue to meet with them until the event. One of the other important deadlines is the dress rehearsals. 2 weeks before the event, we have dress rehearsal conference calls. And all these meetings take place over conference calls. There's no requirement to meet with your mentors or with us in person before the event. The dress rehearsal calls are basically your last chance to get an unbiased individual to do a final look at your presentation. We will time the calls for you and make sure your presentation is at the 6 minutes. We'll give you any last-minute feedback and allow you to make changes before the event. However, we do ask that you upload a draft of your presentation to your control panel by February 26th. So this is an important date to remember. What this does is it allows us to get it to the people on the call. If we don't have anything to provide them on the call, they don't have your presentation to follow along, and the calls do not go as smoothly. Seems like we're getting a little bit of background noise from somebody. If you can press star 6 to mute, I think we can. And then if at any time you need to unmute, you can press star 6 again. Thank you. Appreciate that. And so February 26th, we just asked you upload a draft of your PowerPoint presentation for us to distribute to the critics participating on the call. The final deadline is March 14th. This is the Sunday before the event. This is your final PowerPoint presentation. And again, this will be uploaded to your control panel. And this is the presentation that will be provided for you on site. There is no time on site to bring memory sticks or set up your presentation. They're all preloaded before you arrive. So we do ask that you provide us with your final PowerPoint, uploading it to your control panel on that Sunday or before, and that's the presentation that you'll have available on site. Obviously, you're on the presenter training call today, and we thank you for joining us. We do have two more calls scheduled on Thursday, so you're more than welcome to participate on the licensing call. This call today is the capital call, and we had a licensing call earlier this morning. So we encourage you, if you are looking at capital and licensing and you'd like to participate on a licensing call, there's another one taking place tomorrow. The other thing that I'll mention on this resource page is there is a press release available. It's a template of a press release. It's there for you to use. You can modify as needed, and we encourage you to really make the most of your participation and distribute it to through your own avenues. We don't distribute the release for you, but we're happy to give comments and give you some guidance if you've never written one before. And again, we encourage you to distribute it through your own channels, whether that's local papers or if you want to pay for distribution nationally through Business Wire. It's really up to you how you'd like to use it. There's also the targeted investor and licensee invitation request list. This is a list of the top 10 investors and licensees that you would like to meet. And what we will do is we'll work with you to identify the right people within an organization. We will reach out in our network and the networks of our partners to invite these individuals that you have told us that you would like to meet. As much information as you can possibly fill out is great. However, if you only have a company name, again, we'll be willing to work with you to find the right individual. And we'll send them a complimentary invitation on your behalf to attend the event and see your presentation. So if you can get those into us as soon as possible, the earlier we get them, the earlier we can send out the invites and provide people time to make travel arrangements. The rest of this page, we do have the hotel information, so I encourage you to make your hotel reservations. The exhibit hall schedule and booth details are also located here. George Byrne is our exhibitor firm, and they can provide you with just about anything on site for a price. This is also where we'll be posting the presentation schedule. All the presentations are set to take place on either Tuesday, the 16th, or Wednesday, March 17th. And so again, in February, we'll be posting the presentation schedule here. And that brings us to the end of the resource page. And again, everything I went over and all the information you need will be available here, and we will update it with current information. And so with that, I don't want to take up too much time for the housekeeping and logistics, but I would like to introduce Dave Levinsky. He's with Growth Inc. And Dave is going to talk a little bit about what goes into the 6-minute presentation and really how you can make the most of 6 minutes of time while you're at the WBT. And so Dave, I'll turn it over to you, and again, we'll do some Q&A at the end of the presentations, and if you can just give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself.
Sure. My name is Dave Levinsky. I'm the president and co-founder of Growth Inc., and it's spelled GROWTHINK. And you can find us at growthinc.com or Growth Inc. University. For the past 10-plus years, we've been assisting entrepreneurs in developing business plans, raising capital, and growing their companies. So we've done a lot of work with over 2,000 clients raising a lot of capital. So I've spent a lot of time raising capital and in the rooms of investors. So I'll run through briefly, John put together a great presentation as well, on what I see as the keys within a know, a 6-minute presentation. And the first key I want to say is that investors cannot invest in what they don't understand. And what I mean by this is that too many times you as the entrepreneur will talk about your business in a way that it's hard for the investor to understand. You need to simplify it. The best way to do that is by using what's known as the high concept pitch. And that's a term that was coined by Hollywood, and they said that Aliens was Jaws in space. And a great example, a company called Bookswim promotes themselves as Netflix for books. And so when you hear, hey, we're Netflix for books, you immediately understand what they do. So as much as possible, you want to use analogies, use a high concept pitch so that people understand you. We're like Motorola, but better, and here's why. You also want to focus on the benefits of what you're doing and not the specifics. So really focus on allowing investors who are very, very smart, but still, if they can't grasp what you're doing, they can't possibly invest. So definitely spend some time pitching friends, family members that don't know what you're doing to make sure that they understand it. Secondly, I want to make sure, and I really want to spend the first 30 seconds introducing what you're doing and making sure that they get it. The second thing that you need to do in your presentation is define your market opportunity or the market problem that you're solving. And the key word here is pain. You want to discuss what the pain in the market is. And a lot of investors look at it as, are you an aspirin that is masking the pain, or are you a real solution that is solving or curing the pain? And ideally, you're curing that pain. When we talk about the market, I want to make sure that you focus on what we call the relevant market. And the relevant market, no one really wants to hear about the generic market, the $1 trillion U.S. healthcare market. The relevant market is the market that you can get 100% of. So if you are in medical, you know, devices, that's a piece of the healthcare market, then you go dig down deeper and deeper medical devices to help with this condition or that condition. So I really want you to focus on the relevant market. Investors hate to hear that, hey, if we only get 1% of this big market, we'll be successful. That means that you didn't define your relevant market size. You need to think about the world and your market like General Electric does, and General Electric thinks of it as, if we're not the dominant player, if we don't have 50% plus of a market, we're going to exit out of that market. So you need to think about what and define what your relevant market is and show how you're going to dominate that market. And equally importantly, show that that's a big enough market that a venture capitalist is going to get a return on their investment. And then after you talk about your market and the market pain, you really want to go through your management and your organization here. And some tips that you want to do here is you want to be careful not to use superlatives. You don't want to keep saying that we're the best, we're world class. You got to realize that investors that you're going to be presenting to, they sit in meetings 3 or 4 a day for many, many years. They've heard everything that could possibly be said. They've heard about all these world-class management teams, all of these experts that, and some of them which they funded and failed. So you want to back up all of what you're saying. You want to try to avoid superlatives with the management team and anywhere else in your presentation. Talk about who the managers are. Talk about past performance as much as possible. VCs and other investors understand that the best indicator of future performance is past performance. Not only talk about, hey, I used to work at this firm, but what did you accomplish at this firm? Talk about what your specific accomplishments were that give you the ability to execute on this venture. Next, I want you to talk about, you know, your marketing and sales strategy. And with marketing and sales, any initial sales traction that you can cite is great. And, you know, you want to, particularly for a technology company, you may not want to spend too much time on marketing, except that you want to show that you have a plan in place. But any traction that you have in any part of your business, you want to focus on, because investing is really a game of concept to reality. And obviously, when it's just a concept, there's a lot of risk and obviously a lot of reward. But as much as possible, you want to position your company as more realistic, as you're actually achieving what you're setting out to do. You're actually accomplishing a lot. So anything that you've accomplished in terms of marketing in particular, you've gotten customer adoption, you've gotten customers to beta test, you've done this or that, you want to stress what you've accomplished because that's an indicator of what you can accomplish in the future. That also removes some of the risk from investors. In terms of the next section that I'd like you to talk about and present is financial information. Key to financials is you need to make sure that they are at least somewhat realistic. Investors are most likely going to discount a lot of what you talk about with your financials, but you want to make sure that your numbers make some sense. If you're in a market where the average gross margins are 20%, you can't say we're going to have 60% gross margins. It doesn't make sense. So you need to be realistic. You can't say that we're going to go from zero to 100 million in 2 years. It just doesn't happen. And so you need to be as realistic as possible. You want to look at figures from other companies that have come before you, from public companies, to get a sense of what growth rates are realistic and feasible, what operating margins are realistic and feasible, etc. So you want to make sure you're based in reality. And a key point there is that if you think you're going to grow very rapidly and bring a lot of revenues, you may raise too little money and go out of business. And also, you're going to lose a lot of credibility when you talk to investors that saying that, hey, we're going to grow to 100 million in 18 months, and they're saying there's no way it's going to happen. You're just going to lose complete credibility regarding everything that you're saying. And those are really the key points about your presentation. I do want to cover a couple of questions that are inevitably going to come up. And a key question that comes up in a lot of meetings with investors is, what is your valuation? And there's really no right answer to that question. There's just a whole bunch of wrong answers to valuation. And because if you give a number that's too high, the investors are going to say, hey, you're crazy, you're naive. If you give a number that's too low, you'll also look naive. The right answer for valuation is really, and it should be, that you're looking to grow a very successful company. You realize that it's going to take capital in order to be successful, and that you're going to let the market dictate. You realize you want to raise capital, you're going to let the market dictate what the valuation is. And what that means is that you're ideally going to get multiple investors that give you term sheets that want to invest in your company, and you're going to look at each one and figure out which one has the best valuation and the best venture capital firm backing you to be more successful. So I want you to think about that and not throw out a very high valuation figure, which is going to be a non-starter. You also really need to think about, as an early stage technology firm, is that it's better to have a smaller piece of a big pie than a bigger piece of a small pie. And what I'm talking about here is that, you know, you'd rather have, you know, 10% of a $100 million company, which is obviously worth $10 million, than, you know, 1% of a $1 million company. And that's what venture investing is about. You're going to give up equity in your company, but it's for the greater good of your company. It's going to allow you to grow a much more successful company. And also, the right venture capital firm is going to give you a lot more than just cash. They're going to have a lot of relationships, a lot of knowledge. They're going to have been there and done that and allow you to answer a lot of key questions and guide you through becoming a very successful company. I want to make two last points, and I apologize for speaking so quickly. The last two points I want to make are what's known as risk mitigating milestones. And I see that in John's presentation, he talks about your timeline for growth. I really want you to think about your timeline in growing your company and break out what we call the risk mitigating milestones. What are the key risk factors that investors are going to see when they look at your business? And for example, if you're a software company, the first, you know, risk factor is, can you, you know, design it? Can you build it? Can you create a prototype? And then can you get beta customers? And can you incorporate their feedback? And then can you get distributors? So there's a process for every company's growth, and that's your timeline. I want you to break out what are the key risk milestones that you need to accomplish to take the risk out of the game. Because when investors are going to say, a lot of times, hey, if you're looking for $4 million, they may say, what can you do with $1 million or $2 million? And you really want to come back with a good answer that says, okay, here are risk mitigating milestones. We need $500,000 to get to this point and another $750,000 to get to this point, et cetera, et cetera. So you really need to think through those risk mitigating milestones to figure out, that's going to help you create your timeline and help you figure out exactly how much money you need and when. the final thing I want to mention is the importance of advisors. Probably the biggest tip and thing that I've learned over years of capital raising for companies is that you really want to surround yourself as much as possible with advisors. When I talk about advisors, it could be lawyers, accountants, business advisors. I love having other entrepreneurs as advisors. Find companies locally or in your city that have raised venture capital and have taken companies public. Find academic advisors and or industry executives, people that work at big companies in your industry. Getting advisors, creating an advisory board is not only going to help you get connections to a lot of great people, including investors, but it's going to help guide your decision making, give you a lot of credibility when raising capital and growing your business. So those are my key points. I did look through John's presentation, and he's going to go through a lot more great points to help you create a great six-minute presentation.
Great. Thank you so much, Dave. Excellent advice. Great information for our presenters on the call today. I will turn it over to John Adler now, and John's going to continue kind of this topic of how to create really the most of your six-minute presentation and, you know, a little bit on his perspective of what investors are looking for in the market today and how to succeed. John Adler is with Silver Creek Ventures out of Texas. And, John, I'll let you tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Okay. Thank you, Amanda. First, let me apologize. I've had to use a cell phone here, so the audio quality will be what it is. And if for some reason I drop, I'll hop right back in. But so far, so good. Silver Creek Ventures is an early stage information technology investor. We're based in Dallas, Texas. We have a group of institutional investors that back us. We have a current fund of a little over $60 million that we're investing primarily in the Texas and California geographies, and we do look elsewhere. And what we do is kind of a classic venture capital model. We invest early with companies, help the founders grow them into something special. And really, once we invest, we try to work alongside management. So first, Dave did a great job taking you through some really good points of things to think about when you're live with investors. And frankly, the resource page up on the website, the WTBT Showcase website, is also a great read. All of you should read through that carefully before you kind of get engaged here. So I put a few slides together with the idea of, you know, what do you do in 6 minutes? And for starters, you should think of 6 minutes as kind of generous. It's more time than you think. You know, everyone, you know, jokes or practices for the 30-second elevator pitch. So in 6 minutes, you have a much better chance to hold a captive audience and, you know, really get your points across. And you should be able to. So and then the next question is, well, what do you do in 6 minutes? And that's why I kind of titled this 6 minutes to get the next meeting, because that's really the objective of your time on stage. So a couple things. We covered the objective a little bit on content and style points, but let me explain what the subjective means. Raising money from venture people is like peeling an onion. You know, venture folks at first, you know, want to know the high-level stuff of who you are and what you're doing, and eventually they'll get to the core of, you know, your intellectual property and how defensible is it. They may want to talk to customers to find out what your order status looks like. They may want to have architecture reviews with some of the engineers to understand how you put the thing together. They may want to actually introduce you to some potential customers at that point, but all of that happens in good time. From the get-go, if you don't know an investor and you're kind of coming in cold, you know, it's not unusual for it to take 4 to 6 months. That's very typical from the first introduction to the time you actually get a check. And the way to accelerate that is to go to somebody you know or look for people that have been investing in your particular area that need, you know, less education about what you're doing. So in 6 minutes, all you should have in the back of your mind is, I want to get this investor interested and excited enough that they know what we're doing and why they should take a meeting with us. So kind of on slide four, I'm trying to boil this down to, if someone said, you know, I only get 6 minutes and what are the five things or five questions I want to answer? It's easy to remember because you can count your fingers. The first one is the what. You have to tell people right up front, you know, what are you doing? And Dave made a great point that venture firms look at a lot of deals, and kind of the first thing that's going through our heads is, okay, what is this thing? What are we, is this animal, water, or mineral? And what is the company actually doing? The next piece is who the team is, as you've got to constitute it, what your background is and why you're qualified to talk about what you're going to present. And that gives you credibility, and that if you can say, you know, that you're the chief technology person or you're the VP of engineering and you have a long term of experience in engineering or doing the science, then that gives you a lot of credibility. One little point, it also helps to give venture people an idea up front of where you're located, because that kind of gives a visual picture of other potential contacts they may have they can leverage to learn more about you, or they'll know that, you know, deals in this particular space are coming out of that geography. The next question is why, and this is really important in that this is your place to really give venture folks the why does this matter, why should you care, and it's your chance, frankly, to appeal to the investment greed of the investor so that you can say, you know, we're going to go through this project and this is how big a company we can make. You know, out of the hundreds of deals that you're going to see this year, dear investor, this is why this one can make you and your investors substantial returns. The next question is the how, and that usually just answers the question of what's the competitive advantage that you'll create, and in this case it's almost always technology, and how much capital is required to make that come to fruition. So part of what the investors, if they like the idea and they like the team and they like the opportunity, then they're trying to figure out, okay, how big a bet is this and what's the potential payoff for it when we go back to the why question. And then finally, the when is, as Dave pointed out, is it's an important question that has a lot of dimensions. And what you want to show investors is a progression in the growth of the value of the company. So to put it more colloquially, you should think about what's the next financing. In other words, if I raise this money now, what will I look like when I go out for funding next time? And there should be some kind of stair-step increase in value of the company. And I said value, not valuation. Value is going from concept to prototype. It's going from prototype to production. It's going from production to revenues. It's going from revenues to expansion capital. It's going from expansion capital to public markets. All of those represent big steps in the value of the company, and then it will be up to the market to decide what the ultimate valuation is for those particular steps, because they vary by technology, by timing. You know, certain sectors are hotter and are getting more investment attention, so that tends to drive valuation up than others. So that kind of covers the five questions that you need to answer in your 6 minutes. So next on Style Points 1, just to give you a little bit of the environment, the kind of deals that are getting funded these days across the industry in general. For software companies, a lot of companies are getting funded mostly when they have something they can show investors to say, I have built this, I have either customers or I have something in beta, and I'm getting data to show me why this has value and is important. Any kind of project that has a short time to first revenue, because of the amount of uncertainty in the marketplace about how much capital is required to go into deals, if you get to revenue quickly, that helps reduce risk of needing to keep supporting the company with equity financings. A low amount of capital to get to break even. Again, this goes back to how many, you know, if you have to go out for a lot of successive rounds with new investors, that increases the risk of having a down round or not getting a financing done. So if your capital required is low, then perhaps your first set of investors can carry you as far as you need to get to break even. And frankly, there is a lot of people that look at companies today and say, assuming there's no IPO window, is there another exit? Are there other degrees of freedom for acquisitions? Are there, you know, big companies in the area that are acquisitive? Because none of us can predict your time, the IPO window. We all invest for that, to take companies public, but we recognize that we can't predict the timing, so if a company needs to be acquired, are there people out there that can do it? So in the information technology area in general, and a little bit of clean tech, kind of things that are getting the most deals, clean tech is one of them. My note here about C above, be careful with clean tech deals that require tremendous amounts of capital, because those are becoming, if not very difficult, they're becoming more difficult all the time. Wireless applications and mobile commerce is a very active area. I would add e-commerce to that as well. E-commerce is kind of being reborn again as maybe a next generation versions of it. And a case in point, there's some great companies out there enhancing e-commerce through customer reviews and social networking. Software as a service or anything that is taking advantage of next generation data centers. This is a really kind of a 10-year titanic shift in how networking communications is being done from an infrastructure perspective. So there are services like Facebook and others that are being built on top of that that are creating something new. And then finally, I just mentioned Facebook. We get a lot of social networking deals. I would say there are some that are in some new areas that are exciting. There are also a big bunch of them that are trying to become the next Facebook, to which a lot of investors will view with a skeptical eye. So last piece on StylePoint 2, a couple of things, and this kind of goes along the lines with some of the things Dave said. Sound bites help. So it, just the perfect example that Dave gave, you can go in and say, you know, look, we're the next Caterpillar. We're the next Xerox in the documentation management space. We're a tenth the cost and five times faster. You know, for this kind of investment, we'll produce these kinds of returns. Those things help investors very quickly grab a hold of what you're proposing. A second thing is don't read your presentation. You need to tell a story. We as humans are intrinsically wired to listen to stories and remember them better. So what you want to do is you want to not go in and go up and read just your slides and keep your head down the whole time. To give you an example, we saw a deal here where the founder of the company came in and told a story of a senior citizen here in the area that was lost for 6 hours. He had was developing Alzheimer's. He was lost for 6 hours on a particular weekend when it was amazingly cold. And just that whole story kind of grabs your attention, like, okay, now I know what problem that they're going to go solve. So stories are a great way to get an investor's attention. And then let your slide be your outline to kind of remind you along the way the points you want to get across in your story. Next, practice formally and present conversationally. Tell your pitch to your dog, to your spouse, to your neighbors, to classmates, to your peers. The more and more you practice, it will be easier for you to, in a conversational way, make your presentation and be at ease presenting in front of investors. And when you get there, what you find out is that when you get the tough questions from investors, you're kind of prepared because you're not worried about exactly what slide you're on or what points you're trying to make next. Details matter. A good, clean presentation package matters, and the details inside, it's a reflection on management. So, little spelling errors are no big deal, but if your presentation is full of them, then that's a comment on either the detail orientation or the skills of management to communicate. So it's those little things do matter. And then finally, one of the things that is a two-way street is the investors are trying to figure out, is this a skilled team that I can trust and that I want to work with for the next several years? And you should make those same kinds of assessments on investors based on the questions that they ask you. So I'll close with that and kind of hand it back to you, Amanda, for questions.
Great. Thank you. That was excellent advice on really making the most of the 6 minutes. And I'll just point out that your presentation is available on the resource page to refer back to. Also, on that resource page, there's a sort of a template of what a PowerPoint might look like. It goes through slide by slide. to let you know how many slides you really should be trying to fit into 6 minutes, how much is too much, and touches a lot on these key points that both Dave and John have kind of mapped out for you. So for now, I'll just open it up to questions. These could be questions for myself or for John or for Dave. And remember, if you're on mute, it's star 6 to unmute your phone.
Hi, hello. I'm Dave. This is Ben from Cornell. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Sorry, it sounds like we had two people at the same time, but we'll take your question first, and then if the gentleman with the next question hold on, we'll get to him next.
Okay. Sure. My question is about when asking for funding. You know, if we ask for 300 in seed funding, that's my exact budget. It's appropriate to ask for a buffer of some sort, I imagine, because you don't want to run out on your exact budget. Is it okay to do that, and how much of it? And then what do you call that? Do you just say this is a buffer and money as well?
And I think that question is probably for John, correct?
Sure, John, right.
Okay.
It's a very good question. What I like to see, and other investors may have a somewhat different opinion, I like to see a plan that reflects your best estimation of what's going to happen. So if you tell me that you think you're going to need $300,000 by your plan to get to, say, a working prototype, I'll add the fudge factor from there and suggest maybe you need to raise a little bit more money than that. The other thing to think about, though, is there are times when, for example, semiconductor companies, in particular areas or particular technologies, they have to plan on their first chip not being of production quality. So they build a extra spin, at least one, into their chip development timeline and have capital in there to account for that. So I think just be that, present a plan that you think is something you are willing to be measured by, and have that conversation with the investor that says, you know, hey, there's room here for, you know, error, but if we have a big mistake, then we need to raise more money than that.
Okay. Thank you.
Then there was another gentleman that had a question as well.
Yes. I don't know who to pose this to, but to whoever can answer, I guess. My question regards when making a pitch and a funding request, I think as much as anything, this pitch is to get a follow-up meeting. And so how much detail do we go into? We need X amount of dollars, and this is what it's going to be spent for, and then we're going to need Y amount. Or do we just talk about the next round? Or how do we handle that?
This is Paul. I'll jump in and grab this one. I think what you want to be is just succinct in what you intend the funds to be for. What someone wants to know is this funding for, you know, for growth, for sales, for what you necessarily don't want to hear is, you know, we need it for further R&D so we can actually, you know, get to our prototype. That would be sort of the kiss of death. These guys are hoping that you have technology, a product that's ready to go to market. So you don't have to go into, I wouldn't get into a detailed description too much. Give that opportunity to when you visit one-on-one. But I think you do want to say, you know, kind of in three, you know, bullets or in three, one to three, summary concepts of what you need the funding for, so people have a sense of where you are in terms of stage of development and what you're thinking and how rational you are in terms of is this the round that's going to get you there, or is this the first of, you know, two or three rounds, and the individual making the presentation understands that the total capital needs, you know, are going to be 15, but this is the first, you know, two or three, whatever it is. John, maybe you can embellish for me there. I don't know.
I agree with everything you said. I think, again, this is, you got in your 6 minutes, you got to get your key points across. And, you know, when we're ready to ask the next level of questions like know, so how did you come up with that $5 million number? Don't offer the spreadsheet. Offer, you know, I took my engineering and my SG&A plan and I put them together and I got $5 million and I'd be glad to share a spreadsheet with you with all the detail month by month.
Hello?
Yes, did you have a question?
Yeah, this is Dr. Jed from Sinvex Pharmaceuticals. I think, as I understand, you have a template for our slides?
We do. On the resource page, you'll see, really it's a 6-minute PowerPoint mapped out. It's a good starting place if you don't have any, you know, previous presentation to draw on. That's a great starting place to put one together as you begin to work with your mentors. It contains a lot of the information that both Dave and John had, you know, really targeted as the key components in 6 minutes. And it helps you kind of zero in, too, on how many slides. You know, you just want to be very sensitive that in a 6-minute presentation, you're not trying to, you know, go through too many slides with too much information. You want to keep it fairly simple, fairly limited in the number of slides. And so the template that we offer takes you through that.
I mean the color of the slides and that kind of thing.
If you're referring to graphics and design, we generally advise that simple is best. Anything with too many, you know, sometimes we've seen slides where people try to put a schematic, you know, very complicated charts and graphs. It just never conveys well to an audience that's watching the presentation. So if you're going to use charts and graphs, make sure that they're, you know, extremely simple, that the colors are, you know, easy to understand if you're using colors. And, you know, really trying to put any schematics into a slide is just too challenging. It just gets lost on the audience. So when thinking about the design and template, definitely the simple is the best way to go. And I think Dave maybe touched on that, or John did, you know, having too many bullets on one page, you know, really keeping the information succinct and zeroed in on what you want them to know about you in the 6-minute time frame.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I had a quick question.
Yes, please go ahead.
If this is a very early stage company and we don't have key management positions filled in, how do we go about that when, you know, there's only one, say, CTO and / interim CEO and no actual executive positions filled in? How do we go about that in our slides?
Yeah, this is Paul speaking. It's always to your advantage to identify the holes that you know. No one is the nature of this forum and the opportunities within it lend itself to those that are seen in early stage in nature. And so it would be a mistake to glaze over such a thing because it's going to be picked up sooner or later anyway. So what's better is to just, what the advantage you have this early in the process is to describe what you're planning to do. And then over time, and as these transactions develop, you can demonstrate your ability to execute a plan. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the execution that's everyone's trying to judge whether this can happen or not. And that can only begin with the leadership understanding where they are and where they're not, and their plans in addressing all of these needs and holes from the beginning.
This is John. I would agree with that, and I would add, just show what you got. So if you have a slide that says management team, just show the people that are there and what you expect their roles are. And, you know, if we don't see a financial person or a marketing person or a VP of engineering, you know, we'll fill in the blanks.
All right,
thanks.
Well, do we have any last-minute questions that either myself or...
I have one more question. This is Russell Cho from Contractual Studies. The investors, are they selected based on industry, or are we going to give the same presentation to the same people?
the presentations are grouped by industry sector, so it allows those VCs and licensees and attendees that are interested in hearing all the presentations relevant to their industry sectors to go to that presentation stage and see them all at once. What we try to avoid as much as possible is having overlapping sectors, so any kind of industry sectors that we think multiple investors would want to see, we try to keep those on different time frames, different stages, as much as we possibly can. But they are grouped by industry sector, so whatever your given industry sector is, you'll be with other presenters, and the VCs will know exactly when those presentations take place.
And also, one more question. In addition to the presentation, which is only 6 minutes, apparently we're allowed to display our technology. Will we have a chance to discuss further with other people or anybody else interested for the next 2 days?
Absolutely. Every presenter is provided with a booth space, and we encourage you to use this booth space to schedule meetings, invite people to talk to you further, demonstrations if that's what you have available. The setup can be as simple or as elaborate as you like. And one of the final, slides that I will encourage every single presenter, your final slide will say, "I'm at booth number, please come back and talk to me further." And that's where I think the bulk of your conversations are going to take place. And then you'll also be, networking with these individuals over the full 2 days. So, again, we encourage you to use your booth space for those networking activities and then anything within those 2 days as well.
So the investors will be walking around the booth areas and talking to people?
Correct, yeah. When they're not watching the presentations at the stage, they'll be walking around. And John, maybe, you've attended the event before, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your experience, but I think they, they're generally looking at the presentations. They've got it mapped out who they want to visit with after the presentations wrap up, and we'll connect with you at your booth.
Great, thank you.
I think that's great advice, Amina.
Okay, great. Well, I do want to be...
This is Paul. I want to add just one thing. I know we have thrown a lot at you. There are a lot of priorities, a lot of deadlines, a lot of things to think about. But if I could just give you two things to think about as well is, we put this culminates, 11, 12 months of effort. And when the rubber hits the road is when you, the talent, our show, if you will, is there at the showcase. Equally so, we pull out the stops to get as many investors and Fortune 1000 companies to be there. So we've given you an opportunity to tell us who you would like to see. And it's not the only method we use for outreach and marketing, but it can be extremely effective. We basically have a custom-tailored invitation to come to an event, to look at a specific deal that is relevant to a targeted investor or licensee. I would also ask you, everyone, particularly on these capital calls where you have, many of you have boards and advisors that come from big companies or are with a venture fund, you might ask yourself, why would I bring this individual to the showcase if they have already invested in my company? But we've got over 100 deals there. And if you think about it, if everybody...